I've put myself in a classic preacher's bind. Last week, we heard about Jesus' healing of Peter's mother-in-law. I shared with you at that time all the thoughts I have about Jesus as a healer. Yet now, we have another story about Jesus healing a leper, and I've got nothing to add. Nada. So, I've brought along some important world leaders from our first reading with the hope that they might have something worth hearing today. These leaders are the king of Aram, the king of Israel, General Naaman, the prophet Elisha, and to balance them out, a captive child. First, let me introduce General Naaman. He commands the king of Aram's army. We are told he is a mighty warrior and he has a chest full of medals to prove it. He is a national hero and a favorite of the king. His home is filled with luxuries, the spoils of war. Then there's the king of Aram himself. No one in Aram is more powerful. He comes from old money and entrenched power. He is the connection that gives Naaman power. He's there to make his grants and cosign his loans. The next person is the little girl, someone with no power at all. She has no title or name. She is virtually a non-person. First off, she's a child. Back then, children were at the bottom of the heap. The word for servant and child in their language was the same. I'm not sure things have changed all that much. Recently, Newt Gingrich suggested that poor black children should work as janitors in their schools rather than give their parents help to feed them. In New Zealand, children are powerless as well. A recent report said if someone is born poor, the odds are he or she will remain poor. Not only is a child living in poverty more likely to have inferior nutrition, housing, and education, they are deprived of the social connections that are so important to socioeconomic mobility. The most recent figure for children in New Zealand who are like the little girl is 230,000. Of those, 25,000 were hospitalized last year due to respiratory infections due to their living environment. Doctors also treated many cases of rheumatic fever and scabies that are rare in Europe. And last year, 100 of our children died of preventable diseases who would have lived if they'd lived in Japan, Sweden, or the Czech Republic. In the U.S., one out of every three African Americans born in a city will spend time in a homeless shelter before they reach the first grade. While wealth inequality, the biggest contributor to poverty, is worse in the U.S., it is just barely so. New Zealand is still in the lowest 25th percentile of OECD countries. Now, in addition to being a child, our child is a girl, owned but unable to own property, spoken for but unable to speak in a court of justice. Even in her place of worship, she must sit in a separate area, far from the action, in the back of the spiritual bus. So the little girl who joins us today is doubly powerless. But that's not all. She is a war victim, torn from her family and forced into slavery in a foreign country with foreign gods and a foreign tongue. And there seems to be nothing she can do about it. She has no social power, no economic power, no political power, no access to the official center of spiritual power. She is General Naaman's war booty, brought home to enhance his upwardly mobile lifestyle. Now, if anyone would need to have her life transformed, it would be this little girl, poor, captive, and undocumented. No matter how hard she works, she can never earn her freedom. She's trapped with no way out. Nobody knows the troubles she's seen. Nobody knows the plight of a motherless child. Nobody even knows her name. In looking at these three, we have a classic representation of the haves and have-nots. They are conquerors, she is the conquered. They have connections, wealth, and power, and she does not. They have names, and she does not. She needs to have her life transformed, and they do not. Wait a minute. Is that true? At this point, the way we like to divide things falls apart. Surely, the child needs a new life. She desperately needs freedom from her captivity. She needs release from her bondage. But so does Naaman. Beneath the shiny medals on his chest, under the rich fabric of elegant suits, Naaman suffers from a skin disease, leprosy, that at the time no one knows how to cure. His wallet is thick, but his prognosis is poor. General Naaman, the conqueror, is captive to his condition. And it is a horrible condition. It is a systemic disease born in the blood, spreading to the internal organs, deep-seated in the bones, joints, and marrow, resulting in the deterioration of tissues between bones, causing deformity, the wasting away of muscles, the loss of feeling in fingers and toes, hands and feet. Evidently, the disease has not progressed to this point in Naaman's case, but he knew where it was going. He had a skin disease that was more than skin deep. Naaman and New Zealand have a lot in common. Poverty is a systemic problem, rooted also in racism, as by far our poorest children are Maori and Pacific Islander. It doesn't just mean that children go to school hungry and breathe the air of moldy, leaky homes or live in a car. Poverty is at the root of many of our social ills, crime, drug abuse, and violence. It deteriorates the tissue of our common life. It infects our internal organs. It causes the loss of feeling and compassion. We have a systemic disease that disfigures our beauty and deteriorates our common life. Let me return to Naaman. He has this horrible disease and needs to be cured if he is to live. Business as usual won't work. His connections and wealth won't make a difference. The king can co-sign loans and make grants, but he can't cure leprosy. The only connection that can help is one he has never taken notice of, one he has never seen or treated as an equal. I like to imagine he was a kind master. He probably gave the little girl used clothes and leftover food, furniture, and bedding, a small allowance if he was feeling generous. At Christmas, he may have given her a turkey, lollies, and toys. Maybe in the summer, even sent her to summer camp. But he didn't really consider that she might have anything of value to offer him other than maid service. After all, she is a motherless child, and no one even knows her name. The circumstances of this child's life are enough to make a grown person weak. The injustices she lived with could have broken her spirit, shattered her faith, but this little girl found enough room in her heart to have compassion for Naaman. This child found room in her heart to care about the man who tore her from her family and bound her as a servant. She cared about his distress. She worried about his misery. So she told her mistress about a prophet in her homeland that could cure him of his misery. The way the story is told, the miracle comes at the end when Naaman is healed. But I think this is the miracle. This little girl found it in her heart to do something supernatural, to meet hatred with love and violence with nonviolent action. This wounded child found it in her heart to point out the way to Naaman's healing, to a transformational rebirth. She didn't do it as a victim. She didn't do it to curry favor. She did it as a witness to a truth spoken by Martin Luther King Jr. many years later in a Birmingham jail. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. So this child, living in poverty, sets in motion a series of actions on the highest level of international government with her words. The king of Aram sends a letter to the king of Israel introducing Naaman, who takes with him heaps of diplomatic gifts signifying status and wealth. He is still captive to the system of worldly power plays, leveraging influence. The king of Israel is a little confused. He can't cure Naaman. But then Elisha, the prophet, of whom the little girl spoke, invites Naaman to come see him. So off Naaman goes with his horses and chariots, silver and gold, and 10 sets of clothing. 10 sets of clothing? Really? The man has leprosy, and he's worried about how many suits he has? He seems to be one of those people who prefer changing clothes to transformation. Well, he expects Elisha to be impressed by his commanding appearance. Perhaps he expects a big fancy reception where he knows he has just the right outfit to wear. But Elisha is unimpressed. He just sends a messenger to say, if he wants to be healed, go to the Jordan River, strip off his designer duds, and wash himself 7 times. The general is outraged. He feels dissed. Elisha should have greeted and cured him personally, not sent some loser messenger. And how humiliating to be told to wash in that muddy creek they call a river. The rivers in his homeland are renowned for their crystal clear waters. Some folks, like Naaman, prefer a distant river. Sometimes transformation looks clear in the distance. Sometimes it's easier to write a check and send it to help some ministry somewhere else than welcoming our own neighbors with different backgrounds. To Naaman's huffing and puffing and suggestion of better rivers to wash in, Elisha tells him to shush. He isn't the general in this battle. Come off your high horse and go wash if you want to be released, revived, and made new. That this is an upside-down kind of battle is seen in his servants giving the orders, telling him to do as the prophet says. His healing began with the first humbling steps towards the river. His healing took place as he immersed himself in the muddy water. Our healing will begin when we immerse ourselves in our communities, in the reality of our brothers and sisters, with all of the conflicts and confusion, the humbling recognition of our own ignorance, and the need for direction, the joys and disappointments, the injustices and victories. As he came out of the water, his flesh was like that of the little girls. Like her, he is now connected to the true source of power, not power from the throne of Aaron, but power bringing transformation through connection with one who seemed to have nothing to offer, a child in poverty, a child who showed herself to be a mighty warrior, resisting and rising above all the injustices that could have crushed her capacity to love, but didn't. Perhaps if Naaman can be healed of his systemic illness through the love of a nameless child, we can hope the same. The 230,000 children who remain nameless to us in poverty might point us in the right direction. Amen.